Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This is Internet Marketing. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 161 of Internet Marketing, brought to you by Site Visibility at sitevisibility.com. And in today's show, Kelvin discusses the evolution of search with SEO Danny Sullivan of Search Engine Land. All coming up in Internet Marketing.
So Danny, you've been covering the world of search engines for a number of years now, and being an SEO myself, it seems like there's been a lot of news and a lot of change over the last year or so. Is there kind of more change than ever in the world of particularly Google, but the search engines as a whole, or is that just kind of, it feels like that?
It's hard to say if there's more changes, but it certainly does feel like it. It's fair to say it definitely hasn't slowed down. It has not gotten to the point where you can sit back and 2 months later or 3 months later say, everything I learned 2 or 3 months ago is completely applicable, especially as Google has rolled out its Google Plus social networking system. Mm. It just keeps changing everything all over the place. Mm.
And that kind of search plus your world, where Google is starting to pull in more and more personalization and social data into the search results, seems like a huge change for me. Is there kind of any key? I know it's very early days in terms of kind of lessons for that, but do you think there's any kind of key lessons that marketers ought to be thinking about as a consequence of that rollout?
Well, I think that if you're a search marketer and you hadn't been contemplating social and a social strategy, you absolutely have to do it now. You should have been doing it years ago already, but it really is in your face completely. There have been some traditional search marketers, I think, who have looked at the social marketing that's going on and thinking, well, that's not search, or I don't have anything to do with it, or I don't even know if that step is going to last. And what we have seen over the past few years is that the search engines have looked to the social networks to see if they can incorporate those kinds of signals. And now Google, having its own direct social network, is very much making use of that data in significant ways. So you simply can't ignore social media marketing. That goes directly into search. It's one of those things you really do need to know and be doing.
And do you think, though, that the kind of, I mean, a lot of the kind of negative feedback that people have been against Google Plus have been, well, it's a relatively small group of people in the scheme of things compared to some of the other social networks. Do you think that's really the case? Because I think already it's more representative as web users than perhaps kind of the link graph ever was, in terms of the number of people who had the potential to link already, that it would appear that it's more reflective of, like, in inverted commas, normal web users.
Yeah, I mean, I have been saying that that social is the new link building, and I meant that in two different ways. That for one, it is a way to literally get new links pointing at you, and in a very easy manner. If you think about link building, it is a pain. You have to contact someone. If they haven't found you already, you have to get them to go through and edit a web page and add a link over to you. They have to decide that actually makes sense to do. This is all hard. And then there are plenty of people who could be giving you recommendations or votes, as links are, who don't run websites. So how are they supposed to link to you? Or if they do have websites, there may be blogs where they don't even have the ability to do links in a way that gives you credit without nofollow. In contrast, social media link building and social media recommendations are incredibly easy. You know, you're out there, you get build out a follower base, all those people following you are effectively people linking back to you and saying that this is something that's important. So, you know, it is a much more equal way or a much better way of voting. If you think about it in terms of voting, it's almost like you know, when we went through changes where suddenly women were given the franchise, and previously it was only men. Well, when you start counting links, it's been that kind of way. Only people with web pages are allowed to vote. And when you go to social media, everybody gets to vote if they want to for pages and content across the web. Now, what we're really happy to go through is what's the best way for the search engine to count those votes? Can they see all the votes? You know, but that stuff will get sorted out.
And one thing I think particularly I've picked up on over the last maybe week or so that kind of has really, you know, struck home to me about Google Plus is that particularly with the way they're kind of implementing rel author is that actually I'm kind of almost starting to see that by forcing people if they want those, you know, author snippets to appear to kind of be setting up a Google Plus profile, that actually maybe part of this is that, you know, is part of it that they want it to be the social network of the content producers as much as the voters, if you see what I mean. Because from Google's perspective, if they're kind of working on an author rank as well to some extent, if you see what I mean, that there's, you know, it does seem to be that there's lots of interconnecting themes here within the way that we imagine search is going to head that Google Plus seems to be at the center of.
It is, and Google has been wanting to promote authorship quite a bit. That was one of the things that we saw them trying to do when they rolled out their Knowles system. They were really big on, we want people to have an identity. We want people to be known. We think that that's important. And in fact, I just did this interview with Amit Singhal about who oversees all of Google's search algorithms, about, you know, how their Search Plus world was going. And he spoke repeatedly about identity. And I think that what is happening is, at one point, Google thought, well, maybe we can build authorship based on what we can find out about people across the web and what they link to their Google profiles. And now, I think we're seeing a transition where authorship really means, what do they know about you on your Google Plus account? So, you know, it comes back again to the idea that you really do need to have Google Plus as part of your, you know, search efforts, because that's what they're looking to as the first step of figuring out this authorship.
And I mean, you cover all sorts of areas of the world of search news, Danny. Do you think there's any particular news stories? Because, you know, some really blow up and kind of, you know, in terms of, you kind of had that part to play in the naming of the farmer update before it was named as Panda and that kind of thing. Do you think there's any particular news that's come out over the last 12 months or so that perhaps didn't get the coverage that, you know, and follow up on other websites that you kind of anticipated, that perhaps kind of got a little bit forgotten about or glossed over by the search community?
Well, I was surprised or saddened, I'm not certain the right word for it, that the dropping of search terms that was being reported by Google it hasn't gotten any further attention. Beginning of the year, I released a story, you know, sort of called about how the you know, I called 2011 the year that the search engines took away from search marketers and publishers. And I was focusing on the fact that we lost both link data through Yahoo Explorer, Site Explorer, that was being provided, and the fact that Google pulled out its you know, search terms for people in organic listings. And they did that under the guise of saying it was for privacy, and it's really not. It doesn't hold up in that way. And really, the debate over whether Google has been favoring itself with Search Plus World has completely washed over any of that. So I feel like that's kind of been forgotten. Other things, you know, it's hard to say. I think both things that probably need attention have gotten it. You know, people can argue that there's smaller search engines that maybe ought to get more attention that people aren't looking at, but, you know, I think that they probably are getting the attention that they should be getting, and they'd be getting more. It's been interesting to watch the explosion of interest in Pinterest, or Pinterest. I never remember how to pronounce it, but, you know, that is, I was just reading an article today that somebody said it's one of those things that the normals have found before all the tech heads seem to have gotten to it. And it does kind of feel that way, that it's one of those things that sort of caught on. But those are some of the things, I suppose.
And I mean, interestingly, do you think, you know, because there's always the talk of who will topple Google, what's the next Google, the next big search engine. What do you think that they really need, someone would need to do to kind of do about that? And do you think that perhaps looking, is that, are we even able to envisage what it would be that would topple Google, or do you think it will catch us entirely by surprise? From a search perspective, particularly, yeah.
You know, it may be one of those catch on surprise type of things. Mm-hmm. I mean, the thing that's most likely to topple Google is Google itself. Mm-hmm. And even Larry Page has said this, back, I think it was in September. Mm-hmm. And what's been interesting is, to some degree, you feel like you're watching them do exactly that. If you go back to when Google became popular, one of the only reasons they became popular is because the portals were giving up on search and not really focusing on it. Mm-hmm. And so Google came along with a better algorithm, but it wouldn't have succeeded if the other search engines had done the same sort of thing. But they didn't really think it was a moneymaker. Mm-hmm. And now you're watching Google do so much on the social networking front that potentially any little mistake that you see with search, people will attribute that to, they don't really care about search anymore. Mm. Or that as they expand in these other areas, if they get people who are upset, then there's a sense of, aha, Google, doesn't really, they're just too big. I want to use something else. And so it's possible that they'll cause people to go over and check out something else and start using other things such as Bing. The difficulty is Microsoft isn't some small company. So if you left Google because you were looking for somebody smaller, it's not necessarily Microsoft that you want to go to.
You return to. Yeah.
But it is hard for, to come back, will we suddenly get surprised by a smaller player coming in and grabbing a lot of search traffic away from them? I tend to think not, because it's really hard to create a search engine. You look at something like DuckDuckGo that gets a lot of people who have attention, but DuckDuckGo depends on other search engines. It doesn't just succeed on its own. And it may work for some kinds of queries, but it will fall apart on other kinds of things when you start getting into vertical searching. And if, if it really became a threat, I think that you would see something like Google, try to cut off if they could, to the degree that DuckDuckGo, I think it does take some of their data. If I recall, it might be that they've got the deal now with Bleco, but, I don't think it's just suddenly something rolls out of the garage and here the new greatest search engine has just arrived.
And do you think that that's kind of, it's the misnomer there as well? Because I kind of hit, when you hear that, okay, well, the reason that this search engine is going to do better and take on Google is because it's better at dealing with privacy. And I often think that that's kind of, I can see how that plays well in the blogosphere and how that plays well in the, the world of search marketers. But I can't, I can't imagine that the reason, normal people, to kind of go back to the Pinterest example there, the reason that they would switch from Google would be because of privacy. I think it would just be kind of this natural kind of, here is a better solution to solving my problems, which I don't think being...
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Kind of more private search engines really going to achieve that, really, or at least I don't feel that.
I don't think privacy is going to suddenly. Yeah, I don't think that's going to suddenly be a feature. That's a card that people have been playing for years.
Mm.
For years. I mean, people poking at Google over privacy isn't even new. Mm. And so, I don't think that just suddenly causes a big, huge upswing into people saying, "Oh, I'm going to use Google. They're much more private." Maybe the attention will get more and more focused, and it could cause people to change in the way that they had in the past. But that just really hasn't seemed to have been a big issue.
Mm. Mm. And so one of the biggest stories in the world of search over the last couple of years has been the Panda update. And, you know, I know that it's kind of, there's all the versions and the various updates of the update that seem to be going out there. But I wanted to ask you, Danny, do you think that there's kind of almost a strategic reason that Google have moved to perhaps start to name some of their updates and consciously publicly name them in a way that perhaps they didn't do in the past, you know, with Vince, with the various versions of Panda and the like there, that it was perhaps, you know, whereas there was the talk of the Everflux in the past where there were all these constantly updating small changes, and that the kind of perhaps that the reason that they've been a little bit more forward about naming these is actually to make it clearer to the general web populace that they are making changes and responding to feedback. So do you think that there's some kind of strategic element to that, or is it just kind of that's the way that it's the cookies crumbled on that?
I think it's more coincidence. They didn't want to put a name out to this update the first time, which is why I ended up calling it Farmer, and then they kind of let slip the internal name, which they told me is that I couldn't use, and then they ended up saying when Stephen Levy did an interview, well, actually, we called it the Panda update. Mm-hmm. I think because they were trying to explain a color story about how it got its name, which was off of one of the engineers that was involved, and then of course it took on a life of its own. Mm-hmm. Occasionally, they have named updates. Big Daddy was one of those examples. Yeah. I wish that they simply would do it. I think that in part they fear doing it because they don't want people then to be obsessing, you know, was this the latest update here? Was this the latest update there? But they have mixed feelings on these types of things.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I suppose it's tricky, isn't it? That, like, as soon as they name it and give the thing a name, then that's where all the attention goes, isn't it? And they have to answer all the questions about that particular update, when actually it's probably about the bigger picture that they're more interested in, isn't it? Is the kind of solving the problems. And in internally, it's just kind of a version of software, isn't it, really?
Yeah, and it has, you know, there's different things that happen too. You have people think they got hit by Panda and they may have been hit by something else, you know, and then it's like, well, when you give one update a name, you haven't given everything else a name, then do people get confused in that way?
Mm. And Danny, so you're kind of very involved in the organization of the SMX conferences that take place all over the world. And I know that we've got listeners in kind of various areas of the globe as well. Is there kind of big discernible patterns that you've been able to determine by being involved in those conferences between kind of, you know, Sydney, London, the various events you hold in the US? Is there big discrepancies in how kind of what people are interested in at those different events and kind of their approaches and perhaps where they're at in terms of progression and in terms of search and social media?
Well, most of the shows recently I've been have been just in the U.S. I, you know, lived in the U.K. for 12 years until 2008. And so when I moved back to the U.S., I was kind of like, okay, I'm done doing some international travel for a while. Yeah. I'm actually going out. Of course, I'll be at London this year for the first time in ages, and I'll be out at our Canada show. And I was at Australia last year. So I'm looking forward to kind of getting back into the swing of things and perhaps recovered. but what I would say that I've tended to find in the past is the things that a lot of people would expect, which is that outside the U.S., sometimes the market is still maturing in ways, and in part because you don't even have the features that get rolled out. I mean, Bing, I think, just recently gave Germany a service that wasn't in beta, and this is like 3 or 4 years now after we've had Bing be launched, period. Mm. So there can be some aspects of that. One of the things I found on the SEO side, is that sometimes there's less concern about, you know, am I spamming or am I not spamming? You know, for a long time in the UK, the idea of cloaking was just seen as something you do, not something you avoid. You know, it was just like a sort of a standard type of a thing. You know, I think those days are sort of long gone. The other thing you tend to find outside the US is, I think, much more focus on how you're dealing with other countries. You know, the domain issues, language issues, those sorts of things have always seemed to come up a lot too.
And as a final question, Danny, I know that you've kind of recently launched Marketing Land as kind of the spin-off, as it were, of Search Engine Land, the kind of, you know, the place where you're kind of most involved in the publishing of your content. Is that kind of conscious of the fact that actually the world of search is fitting more into marketing as a more integral part of the picture?
Not really. It's not like we just woke up and said, wow, people should do more than
search. Yeah.
it was much more to do with the fact that we've grown as a company to the degree that we can cover much more than search.
Yeah.
We always thought that, you know, search marketing is just part of overall online or digital marketing.
Yeah.
But we wanted to have the best site we possibly could have covering the search aspects.
Yeah.
That was our core, and that's where we began with. We had run for a couple years the Spin social networking site, and that was designed to be a way for people to, through our publications, learn more about internet marketing. Its focus was always on internet marketing in general and submissions from all over the web. And, you know, in the end, we found that model didn't work. And we felt like we still wanted our company to be involved with providing information about internet marketing in general. And so that's what gave birth to Marketing Land, the idea that, okay, let's just go ahead and pursue the editorial model that we know works so well with Search Engine Land and do the same thing to cover internet marketing in general. And so we hope it does help serve people who are both search marketers and internet marketers.
Cool. Well, fantastic, Danny. I think there's some really interesting topics there, and particularly kind of talking about the way that I think you've made the case really clear that, like, you know, Google Plus isn't an option if you're a search engine marketer. It's the default now, I think, is a really key takeaway that I've taken from this, and one that I've been trying to kind of, live a little bit more personally and try and get a bit more involved on Google Plus. And interestingly, seem to get a really good response there. Have you found that as well, Danny? Kind of a difference in, you know, over the, perhaps, you know, since Google Search Plus your world has rolled out, have you noticed that your kind of interactions on Google Plus getting much more attention than perhaps they did do a couple of weeks before that?
I mean, I've been active on Google Plus since literally it began. And so it's hard for me to see differences. And, you know, there are more people on it, and therefore you get both more content that starts showing up in your stream and perhaps more comments that are coming there. So I would say that kind of change is happening, where you're seeing more interesting things that are showing up. It's still got a ways to go where it has the activity levels that you see on a Facebook or on a Twitter. You know, but you also find some original things out on Google Plus that you just wouldn't find that were on the other networks as well. You know, it has, I think, found its place, and that place is still growing. But there's definitely, you know, a there, as people say.
No, I think that's it. I personally, it's that kind of, I know that I ought to make the effort now, because actually, much in the same way with Twitter, that, you know, I have, you know, in the scheme of things, quite a lot of followers on Twitter. And a lot of that, I think, yeah, sometimes it's down to the content I'm producing, but I think in many cases, it's down to I was there early in the scheme of things, if you see what I mean. And I think that, you know, in my particular case, it's the kind of sharing good content, but being there in the right place at the right time helps as well, doesn't it?
It can be really interesting to do, and at some point we'll do some cross-platform study things, the kinds of things that take off and the kinds of things that seem to be successful. You know, and it's difficult for me because, you know, on Twitter, I'll have like over 200,000 people. On Google Plus, I have like 500,000. And then on Facebook, I have like 25,000. So, because I kind of was the opposite on Facebook, I really wasn't doing much over there and wasn't following over there. So if I share something out on Facebook personally, and it doesn't do as well on Google Plus, it could be because there's simply so many more people that follow me on Google Plus for whatever reason than do it on Facebook. Now, on Search Engine Land, we look at the cross-platform type of stuff, and we can get a sense of what's happening there. Although it can be difficult even measuring in that regard, because if I promote something, then that has a different influence in one place than on the other. But what I can say is that they're all valuable. You know, they're all worth the time. And one of the things that has surprised me is people who have said, oh, I can't even make the time for Google Plus. It's like, make that time. You know, make that time. It's not a question of you don't have the resources, you don't know if you can do it. Open up the account for your business and simply post the same things that you're posting over Facebook. That's not going to hurt you. And at the very least, it's starting to build up your followers at a time when there's still relatively few people who are out there. Because I think it can be much harder for people to climb that hill down the line when, you know, it does start to take off even more.
Yeah, and I mean, I've certainly got the sense that content that, you know, in simple terms, that I did a real relatively small study looking at kind of like about 200 articles across various tech websites and trying to compare the votes on the, this was kind of before Google, you know, relatively early in Google Plus launching, but kind of there did seem to be kind of a pretty strong correlation. So content that does well on Twitter tends to do well on Google Plus, and, you know, even amongst them all, which I kind of expected there to be a little bit less correlation, because I think, oh, well, certain content's going to do better on LinkedIn because it's got more of a B2B vibe. But it certainly seemed from the kind of little amount of research I've done into it, it does seem to be that, you know, good content is good content and it'll get shared wherever it is it gets shared. So you ought to be kind of, you know, bearing that in mind.
Right.
Fantastic. Well, really appreciate that, Danny. Thanks so much for your time there. I think it's, yeah, well worth checking out the conferences at, you know, SMX in London. I know I've attended and spoke a few over the last couple of years, and it's always been, from my perspective, one of the most involved and advanced search conferences in the UK, and one that I know that the search community in the UK certainly take very seriously and love to attend. Fantastic, Danny. No, really appreciate that. That's a really good, really good session. Some interesting bits there. So I look forward to seeing you in London in a couple of months' time.
I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, that's it for today. Thank you so much for listening. You can find us on the internet at www.internetmarketingpodcast.org, where you'll find show notes, links, and instructions on how to subscribe. We would absolutely love to get feedback, comments, and questions from you. If you want to send an email, send it to kelvin.newman@sitevisibility.com. Also, feel free to comment on the website. And if you'd like to use our voice line number, if you're outside of the UK, it's +44 1273 256 150. If you're inside the UK, it's 01273 256 150. And you can leave a voice comment or question and we'll play it on the show. Also, we would absolutely be delighted if you would give us a rating on iTunes itself. Well, that's it for now. Andy White signing off until next week on Internet Marketing.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.